The biggest impact was on Israel and on the American system in the region, including Lebanon, of course, the American system or American order in the region, because Hosni Mubarak has orphans in Egypt and orphans in Palestine and orphans in Lebanon. What is clear is that we have entered a new period. The region has entered a new period. Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of his Zionist enemy, speaks about an earthquake which has unknown results. And he's right in that perspective, because all intelligence services, American, Israeli, the international intelligence services, were surprised what happened in Egypt and in Tunisia and in other countries. The biggest loser, my dear brothers and sisters, from the developments and the changes which we are witnessing, undoubtedly, is America. Although America is trying to lessen its losses, is trying to contain the developments, and Israel as well, and the American order in the region, meaning that anyone who tied his destiny and his decision and his future to American, to America, they are also losers. So America, Israel, and those who tied their destiny to America, they are the biggest losers in the current period, the period of changes. In Israel, it is clear that there is a state of anxiety in Israel, and there are efforts being pursued now to reconsider these strategies in Israel. For 20 years, for the past 20 or 30 years, they base their strategies on the rule that the Eastern Front for Israel, the front with Egypt, this front is a secure front, a calm front. And on the other side of the border, there is a strong strategic ally, a solid ally, which is Egypt. That was the strategy of Israel before when it came to their Eastern Front. And so they didn't need to build their army to send any contingencies or take any military measures based upon a confrontation with Egypt or any tension with Egypt or any threat from the Egyptian border. They were sure that there was a strong guard on these borders, on this border. And so we notice, even when we look at the map of occupied Palestine, we find that for the last few decades, we have many military airports, many airfields which were transformed to the east, because they believe this was a secure area far away from the dangerous fronts with Syria and Lebanon. Now they must reconsider. The Eastern Front can no longer be considered as a secure front. They can no longer consider it as being far away from any threats, whatever be the future in Egypt now. On the other side, on the other hand, they also depended on the Egyptian regime in curbing Gaza and in isolating Gaza, in putting pressure on the Palestinians to answer positively or to accept the Israeli conditions. And we heard from the Palestinian colleagues, from our Palestinian brothers, we heard from them the magnitude of the pressures which they were subject to from the regime of Hosni Mubarak and members of this regime to accept the Israeli conditions. So Egypt had a big role to play, the Egyptian former regime had a big role to play in forcing Palestinians to accept Israeli conditions. And we all remember, we all know Hosni Mubarak regime, the stance and the position it took during the war on Gaza in 2008, in early 2008. And we all know, we didn't speak about this before, but we'll speak about it now. We all know the role which Hosni Mubarak's regime played in the July 2006 war on Lebanon. And we all know the role which other regimes, other Arab regimes, played during the July 2006 war. Regimes who still are in control now, but regimes which will be overthrown in the future, God willing. Hosni Mubarak told them, continue at that time during the July 2006 war. He told them, you've made progress, continue with this war. And there is no doubt that one of the faces which became black in the Arab world when the resistance was victorious in the July 2006 war was Hosni Mubarak's face. His face was one of the faces which turned black when the resistance in Lebanon achieved victory in July 2006. Yes, this transformation, this change in Egypt, from Israel's perspective, is a big change. Even if Egypt doesn't wage a war, the developments will always be a source of anxiety for the Israeli enemy. The Israelis will always fear that some surprising changes will occur, changes which Israel never had in mind. Just like what happened when Hosni Mubarak's regime was ousted. Let me here make some quotes. Barak, the Israeli Minister of Defense, says the following. He says that the whole region, and he was speaking from the border with South Lebanon, he said that the whole region is changing in front of our own eyes. And we witnessed what happened in Lebanon. He's upset because of what happened in Lebanon. And we also witnessed what happened in Lebanon, where the government was transformed into a government which is uncomfortable for Israel for many reasons. What does he mean? Does he mean it was comfortable, Israel was comfortable before? He said this new government is more attached to Hezbollah. And we also saw what happened in Tunisia and in Egypt. He's saying the same as what other people are saying here in Lebanon when they say the government of Bekati is a Hezbollah government, although it is not. Barak adds, he says, I don't think there will be immediate results for what happened in Egypt. However, what happened in Egypt shows us the volatility or instability of the region. Of course, Israel felt strong before, wanted to impose conditions and sign agreements with different governments in the region. However, here Barak speaks about the extent of instability in the region. He speaks about the protests in other countries. He also speaks about how Turkey is changing. He says the peace agreement with Egypt will remain and there are no military repercussions on Israel. So here he's trying to reassure. In another quote, what does he say? If we speak about Ashkenazi, the former Israeli Joint Chief of Staff, the outgoing Joint Chief of Staff, he said the radical camp is increasing in strength. The circle of confrontations has increased, has expanded, and we are ready for any type of threats. The radical camp is growing in strength, and we can see this very clearly before Egypt. Look at what happened in Lebanon, he says. Look at what happened with Turkey. Iran also exists, and Iran is behind much of the financing and the training and the providing of weapons for many movements in the region. And he adds, Ashkenazi, as the reason behind this is because of the weakness of the moderate camp, the weakness of what he calls the moderate camp in the region, and the traditional Arab leadership, also because of a new understanding regarding the American strength in the region. This is Israel's situation. Listen, look at what the Israelis say. If I want to speak here about Lebanon, to conclude the Israeli part of my speech, just a few days ago, Ashkenazi, the outgoing Israeli Joint Chief of Staff, was in a ceremony, farewell ceremony. He spoke about his military achievements. He spoke about what he did for the Israeli military during the last few years. And he said that the failures which were witnessed in July 2006 and the Gaza War will not be repeated. So hence, the Israeli Joint Chief of Staff, the outgoing Joint Chief of Staff, is confessing to failures in July 2006 and the war on Gaza, although they said the war on Gaza was a victory for the Israelis. But what does he also say? What does Ashkenazi also say? He says that Hezbollah is a resistance movement. The resistance in Palestine is also a resistance movement. He speaks about Hamas. He spoke about Hamas, he referred to Hamas by its name. Because there is an argument in the Israeli military and the Israeli society, Ashkenazi says, but the resistance in Palestine cannot occupy the Naqab in South Palestine or southern Israel, according to what he says. And the resistance and Hezbollah cannot occupy the Galilee Valley. So 20 years ago, Israel spoke about occupying Lebanon. Nobody in Lebanon spoke about occupying northern Palestine or the Galilee Valley or anywhere in occupied Palestine. This wasn't outside the circle of reality. It was even outside the circle of imagination. Even people who have big imaginations dream of this. Occupying parts of northern Palestine. We used to hear about, will Israel occupy Lebanon or will it not occupy Lebanon? And the biggest achievement of resistance is that it made it difficult for Israel to occupy Lebanon or to occupy southern Lebanon. But my dear brothers, my dear sisters, today now we have a clear argument which is occurring, a debate in Israel. Can the resistance in Lebanon occupy northern occupied Palestine? And can it occupy the Galilee? And so for this reason, the outgoing Joint Chief of Staff in Israel has to reassure. He doesn't need to reassure, but he is. In his first visit, for Benny Gantz, who will replace Ashkenazi, Benny Gantz, the new Israeli Joint Chief of Staff, his first visit, of course, he was appointed on Monday. Tuesday, he went to the border with South Lebanon. Welcome. He came with Barak to show that they were brave. What does Barak say? I am, of course, an expert when it comes to Barak, just like I am when it comes to the five contingencies. What does Barak tell the Israeli soldiers? He tells them, yes, you must be ready, because if any war occurs, you might be requested, the Israeli military leadership might call on you to enter Lebanon once again. I would like to tell Barak, and I'd like to tell Ashkenazi, and I'd like to tell Benny Gantz as well. We have to get used to his name, he has been newly appointed. I'd like to tell them, I want to use the same rhetoric which Barak used. I'd like to tell them on this commemoration of the martyrdom of Sayyid Abbas Musawi and Sheikh Raghib and Haj Ahmad Mughniyi, I tell the Mujahideen of the Islamic resistance, be ready for the day if a war is imposed on Lebanon, be ready for the day whereby the leadership of resistance will call on you to take control on the Galilee, on areas in occupied Palestine. So what I'm saying here, liberating the Galilee or liberating Al-Jalil, and I'd like to tell Ashkenazi, you are mistaken in your evaluation. You are mistaken. For 30 years, you made mistakes in evaluating your confrontations with the resistance. You made a mistake when you assassinated Sheikh Raghib Harab. You made a mistake when you assassinated Sayyid Abbas al-Musawi, and you confessed to your mistakes. And you made a mistake when you killed Haj Ahmad Mughniyi, and you will discover that you made a big mistake when you assassinated Ahmad Mughniyi, and you made a mistake when you insisted on confronting a country and a people who are determined to preserve their dignity by sacrificing the blood of their dearest youth, the people whose slogan has always been, we will never be humiliated. There are some in the Zionist entity who are educated, who are realistic, who are logical, and who do not hide behind the truth, or who do not try and hide the truth itself. Last year, when I spoke about striking harbors or airports in Israel. Today I have something else to say. The resistance fighters sent me something, sent me something by a certain Israeli official who is specialized and expert in technology, whose name is Ozi Rubin, who is considered one of the most famous experts when it comes to defense against rockets. So he is an expert, as I said, who is concerned with this. He knows a lot about rockets and he knows a lot about defending against rockets, anti-rocket weaponry and the distance, and he knows about tactics. He's an expert in all these details. Listen to what he says. Listen to the advice he gives to the Zionist leadership. And here, in between brackets, this is what is protecting Lebanon. This is what is also protecting more than Lebanon, actually. What does he say, this person? He says that Hezbollah, is capable of closing down our airports. This is not what I'm saying. I said this last year. But what he's saying, this Israeli expert is saying, that Hezbollah is capable of closing down our airports, our harbors, and the electric power stations, and the strategic locations. And I can only say, I can only hope, actually, that the Israeli people will have very good shelters. His hope is that they will have good shelters for the Israelis, underground shelters to protect the Israeli people. That's his only hope. Now, there is another issue when it comes to Israel as well, which is regarding the assassination of Imad Mughniyeh. This blood is still tracking the Israelis down. Fear controls them. They are in a state of anxiety, especially at this time. I will not go into details, but what I will say that the decision remains as it is, and this decision will be carried out, God willing. It will be carried out at the appropriate time and part of the appropriate goal. And I'd like to tell the Zionist leaders and the Zionist generals, wherever you go, to whichever place you go in the region, at whatever time, you must always beware, because the blood of Imad Mughniyeh will not go without a response. We in Lebanon, in confronting Israel, we brought about justice and we brought about stability. We brought about justice and stability. We established justice in its two sides to a high extent. Not completely, but to a high extent. The resistance movements from all different political parties, from all different Lebanese political factions, together with the Mujahideen and the Martis from Palestinian factions, they were able to return the rights to their owners because of this blood, because of these Martis and these leaders. The people of Bint Jbeil returned to their homes, the people of Jazid returned to their homes, the people of Marjayun, the same, the people of Hasbaya, they also were able to return to their homes. The land, the farms, the homes returned to their owners, and territories were returned to national sovereignty. This is part of justice, which was not achieved by the Security Council or the USA or any international agreements. The Lebanese and their Palestinian brothers, with the support of Syria and Iran, this is what was able to achieve justice. This was the way justice was established. The other face of justice is that many of the criminals were killed in the battlefield. One of them was the Israeli commander in Lebanon, Gerstein, and he was replaced by Benny Gantz, who is now replacing Ashkenazi. In order for you to know that Benny Gantz was in the last year or last 2 years in South Lebanon. He was the leader or commander of the Israeli troops in South Lebanon when Israel still occupied South Lebanon, and he was defeated. He also witnessed defeats, and he was the one who withdrew his troops in this humiliating way, and he closed the gate between Lebanon and occupied Palestine. So Benny Gantz is someone who has witnessed defeat. The new Israeli Joint Chief of Staff is someone whom we have wiped the floor with. He knows South Lebanon. He knows the resistance in Lebanon. And he was also the commander of the Israeli infantry forces in the July 2006 war. These infantry forces, which were incapable of entering Haita and Ben Tishbeil in South Lebanon. He is one of the commanders of the Israeli defeat in July 2006. So the new Israeli Joint Chief of Staff, this is who he is, Benny Gantz. He has a very long experience in Lebanon. He knows what Lebanon means. We established justice, we established part of justice, and on the other hand, the first part, which is returning rights to their rightful owners, and the second part is that some of those criminals and some of those murderers, some of those who committed massacres, were punished and were killed on the battlefield, and we achieved stability. Ever since year 2000, May 2000, until July 12, 2006, between the withdrawal of Israel from South Lebanon and the beginning of the July 2006 war, we witnessed stability in the Bekaa and in South Lebanon, the Bekaa, which is in eastern Lebanon. Unprecedented peace and stability for 60 years. And this peace and stability was because of the resistance. The war is something unique, the July 2006 war. It had its unique aims. It was part of the project in the region, and this project failed. And after the end of July 2006, ever since the 15th of August 2006, until today, the army and resistance and the people, they are the ones who are bringing about stability in the south, stability which is unprecedented for decades. So the resistance is bringing about stability and justice. Together with the army and the people, and with the support of some sides, we establish justice and bring about stability. We are protecting our territory and our borders. We are not protecting the borders of the enemy. I don't want to go into this matter more, but anyway, today, what is protecting Lebanon is this equation after all of his experiences. Now, let me speak about the situation in Lebanon, the domestic situation. In Lebanon, of course, for weeks or over the next few weeks, we have some important events. And we have important issues which are being reinvigorated once again, and I will speak about them in brief. One event is the weapons of the resistance. We listened to what was said. They said that the remaining factions of the March 14 Alliance are determined to go back to the rhetoric of always raising the slogan of Hezbollah's weapons, always raising this issue. Actually, they never abandoned this. Even when we established the equation in the cabinet manifesto of the army, resistance and people, they kept speaking, criticizing our weapons. They said this was an issue of national disagreement. Yes, we never actually said or alleged that this is an issue of consensus. It's an issue of division and disagreement. And ever since the beginning, it was an issue of disagreement, before 1982 and after 1982. Now, let me speak about after 1982. After the Israeli invasion in 1982, there is a national disagreement when it comes to the weapons of the resistance. Weapons or arms, my dear brothers, is detail. The biggest disagreement is about the resistance itself, not about its weapons. Weapons is a detailed issue. We in Lebanon, we were and still are in a state of disagreement about adopting the choice of resistance. Yes. Yes. And this is no condemnation of this. Does not mean that we're condemning the resistance. This is a condemnation for those whom, ever since 1982, did not resort to resistance and who betrayed the resistance and who criticized the resistance and who turned their backs to resistance or even stabbed the resistance in the back. This is a condemnation to them, not a condemnation to the resistance itself. The resistance which they wanted to make as part of a agreement, they said, for how long can the army enter into South Lebanon, and how many troops can enter into South Lebanon, and what type of weapons can they use? Similar to Camp David. Today, there was a very sad news item I saw, which was that Israel allowed or gave permission for new troops from the Egyptian military to enter the Sinai Peninsula. For the sake of what? For the sake of protecting the gas transfers from Egypt to Israel, the gas pipelines from Egypt to Israel, meaning if the Egyptians want their military or more soldiers to enter into the Sinai, where many Egyptian martyrs fell in previous wars, if they want to do this, they need Israeli permission according to the Camp David Accord. This is the other team. Now, on the 17th of May, what they said is that when the Lebanese government wants to send a Lebanese military contingent or wants to increase its military presence in South Lebanon or send some certain weapons, it needed the permission of the Israeli government. The resistance today, because of the resistance, the Lebanese government can meet and send 50,000 Lebanese soldiers to South Lebanon. And can the Israelis open their mouths? It can send any type of weapons it wants. Can the Israelis do anything about it? It can do whatever it wants in South Lebanon, the Lebanese government. It has the freedom. The freedom we got in South Lebanon is complete freedom, a high freedom, a freedom which we deserve because of the blood of our martyrs. Not because of certain agreements, not because we surrendered, not because of humiliating negotiations. Yes, we are in a state of disagreement regarding the choice of resistance and the arms of resistance. Now, if there is anyone over the past few years who was practicing maneuvers, they are telling us now we are not lying anymore. Thank you very much for not lying. Let everyone say what's in his heart. Let everyone express his real opinion without any maneuvers. Yes, the issue of the arms and resistance is an issue of national disagreement. Now, previously, we agreed to go to the table of national dialogue to discuss the national defense strategy. And if your stance is clear, he's speaking now to the other side, March 14, if your stance is clear regarding the arms of resistance, you must tell us, do we need to discuss this? If you're totally against the arms of resistance, we continue that our going to the table of national dialogue and agreeing to discussing our arms was a big concession for the sake of uniting the country, for the sake of the country in general, and to discuss our disagreements by face-to-face with one another. However, if your stance is clear, you're totally against our arms, don't bother. Don't bother the president, don't bother us in holding a table of national dialogue for nothing. But if you are ready for national dialogue, we are always ready because we are people of logic, people of strategy, a strategy which has proven throughout history that it is a true and correct strategy. If, according to your evaluation, that the daily language, the daily speeches which you make can hurt the resistance and the arms of resistance, you're just wasting your breath, just like you did for 6 years. And now the situation has changed. Read very well. Look at what's happening around you. The Israelis are drowning. They are reading, actually. It's good for people to read what is happening, to look into what's happening. To insist on waging this battle or transforming this into one, two, or three items for a new opposition, this means you are insisting on waging an aimless confrontation. If you insist on this confrontation over our arms, do what you want. Do what you want, but this is an aimless confrontation if you insist on waging it. Now, regarding the special tribunal, we must remind everyone that we in Lebanon, we are people who seek the truth, and we are people who seek justice, and we assure you that justice is a condition for stability. This is something undoubtful. However, after all these years have passed, we would also like to make a calm call. I call on the people of the other side of the March 14 Alliance, leaders and their supporters. After all we witnessed, the direction which was taken by the UN-backed probe and by the special tribunal, does it lead to the truth, and hence does it lead to justice or stability? Because the condition to justice, to establishing justice, is knowing the truth. We must uncover the truth, and based upon this truth, we establish justice. And when it comes to justice, when we establish justice, we will have stability. The direction which was taken by the UN-backed probe, does it lead to the truth? We saw the file of the false witnesses, part of this file. We listened to the way the investigations were held. And we also saw how the investigations were political, how all of the discussions in the investigations were political. Someone said this, I heard this from one person, I have this evaluation, I have this analysis. How was this related to judicial proceedings? We have an investigation which took a specific direction, and they worked in all different angles to take in this direction, and many people were subject to injustice on this direction, and now it's on another direction. Anyway, this direction and the false witnesses and the leaks to the media, the politicization, the employing or taking advantage of this probe, making assumptions or not making other assumptions, not taking certain assumptions into consideration, and these accusations before any indictment has been made, does this lead to the truth? If we really want to seek the truth, we as Lebanese, we are concerned with discussing this once again, to discuss, is there another way, an alternative way to seek the truth or to uncover the truth? Yes, there is, if we sit down and discuss this. But you are the ones who missed the chance. We, on the table of national dialogue, when, of course, Nabih Birri was there, when they spoke about the tribunal, international tribunal, we said, yes, we support the principle of an international tribunal. We support it in principle only. This is what we said it before. We said it for the sake of Lebanon's internal situation and to have cohesion in Lebanon, not because we were convinced about the nobility of the tribunal or convinced about the international tribunal in general. However, we had that we must discuss the laws of this tribunal so that we have guarantees that it will really be a just tribunal which strives to uncover the truth. And everyone knows how the international tribunal was agreeing to the international tribunal was kidnapped. The Lebanese government at that time kidnapped the decision of agreeing to the tribunal. So there was a clear direction, a politicized direction, and nobody has the right to discuss, to get legal guarantees. Today, okay, if you want to continue with this international tribunal, which only sees one scenario and ignores any other assumption, for example, Israeli involvement, this tribunal, which is involved in false witnesses, politicization and corruption, if you want to believe in such a tribunal, that's your business. If you believe this will lead to the truth, if what will be announced in the indictment or by the absentee trials in absentia, okay, this is your business. But we, on the other hand, we will act according to what we know. We believe that what will happen is fabrication and injustice. However, very clearly, very honestly, this direction is not the direction which leads to the truth and establishes justice. The third point regarding Lebanon is the issue of the government and what happened lately or recently. Also, in brief, what the other team or the other side was subject to is natural because of the mistakes committed by the other side meaning the March 14 Alliance. However, what is most unfortunate is that the mistakes that they are speaking of are not the real mistakes. The mistakes they committed are something else. They realize that they committed or they made mistakes, but they are mistaken in identifying them, the mistakes they committed. Anyway, what happened is a result of the mistakes which the March 14 Alliance committed, however, also because of what the project in the region was subject to, the big project in the region was subject to. The other side, the March 14 Alliance, was part of the neoconservatives. Their beloved person is John Bolton and the Bush administration. And there was a huge project in the region, a project which was attacking in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Iran, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Palestine, on the Palestinians in Gaza. It was a project of hegemony and control. And the March 14 Alliance was part of this project. They were part of this system. Now, some could say that I am accusing, but I'm not making accusations here. I'm speaking the facts, the truth. Everybody knows the ties of the March 14 Alliance with Feltman and with Bolton and with the former American administration and the current American administration. And everybody knows the ties of this March 14 Alliance with the American order in the region and their ties with the overthrown regime of Hosni Mubarak. Now, when we have a project which is collapsing, it is very natural that the members of this project will feel weakness. So why are they surprised? If they want to evaluate, they must look at the whole picture. They were part of a project which was collapsing. The American system, the American order, is being dismantled and is collapsing, and so for this reason we are witnessing this weakness. And so I call on them to reevaluate, to really reevaluate the developments, and let them not miss the real mistakes they committed. They must look at, identify the real mistakes they committed. Of course, they spoke about mistakes they committed, but these are not the real mistakes. They should identify the real mistakes which they committed. We must go back to the roots to discover the real mistakes which were committed. And the first mistake was to be part of an American project in the region. And the biggest mistake was to be part of the American order in the region. And the biggest or greatest mistake is to tie the destiny of Lebanon to the destiny of the American policies in the region. And one of the biggest mistakes is to get the assistance of America and the West and the Security Council and the international resolutions to use them against our people and against our country, like they're going to do now. They're going to repeat this mistake, by the way, the March 14 Alliance. They're going to say, let's get America's help, although America will be ready, it'll be happy to, and let's get the help of France and Britain and the West and other Arab capitals in the EU, although many Arab capitals are preoccupied with themselves because of what's happening. However, what the March 14 Alliance is going to do, to tell these capitals in the international world, take action against Najib Mikati and against a new government. They're going to say, this is the government of Hezbollah and Iran and Walayat al-Faqih. I wish it was, by the way. But this is the behavior we're going to witness from the March 14 Alliance. Of course, the beginning of the confrontation is based on lies, and here they're committing the same mistakes again. They're repeating the same mistakes, and I feel the weakness of the other side. Why? Because they're lying. Because they're lying to themselves, and they're lying to the world, and lying to their own supporters. They realize that this government, the government of Najib Mikati, which will be formed, is not the government of Hezbollah. They know this. They are holding consultations and negotiations with Najib Mikati. They know what's going on with Najib Mikati. And all the Lebanese and all foreign ambassadors also know that Prime Minister Mikati is talking to Hezbollah in the same way he talks with other factions and other political parties. And Najib Mikati has his own independent decisions. And he has yes or no, I accept this, I don't accept that. This is okay, this is not okay. This is the situation. Now, when you speak about someone in this way, and you speak about Najib Mikati in an unjust way, and you're the ones, by the way, who are behaving unjustly towards the post of Prime Minister. You're saying he's part of Hezbollah and he's not. You're saying Hezbollah is forming a government. Hezbollah is not forming a government. And if Hezbollah would form a government, if Hezbollah were actually forming a government, the government would have been formed about 2 days ago. It would have been formed already. This means that even the tools which you are basing your behavior on are dishonest tools. today dragging the American pressure or dragging Western or European pressure to the government, to the new government and to the government of Najib Mikati? Is it for Lebanon's national interest? For the sake of what? Do you want American or Western assistance against this new government? For the sake of the arms? If you get American assistance, will you solve the issue of Hezbollah arms? We told you, you're wasting your time if this is your plan. The Security Council Resolution 1559, America invading the region July 2006, can anything more happen? This all happened, and look at it, are there our arms? So, do you really think that you can hurt us or take away our arms by getting assistance from the West now? Why do you want the West support against the government, the next Lebanese government or the new Lebanese government? Maybe you want it for certain reforms, administrative or financial reforms, for the sake of exporting the money of those corrupt people who stole Lebanese people's money over the past few years. This is what is happening in some Arab countries now, by the way, for the sake of uncovering the truth of $11 billion in order to address the daily life of the Lebanese people. The last government was given 1 year, but they are not ready to give 1 day for Najib Mikati. The former government of Saad Hariri, the National Unity Government, as it was called, was given 1 year. The Prime Minister was given a lot of support. What did this government do? What did the Prime Minister do? What did the Prime Minister do, the former Prime Minister, Saad Hariri? He went from one country to another. Can you manage Lebanon in the way of emirs or princes? Lebanon needs a government and a Prime Minister and a government which sits in Beirut and listens to the problems of the people and addresses the problems of the people and feels the pains of the people, the hunger of the people, the poverty of the people, the unemployment. This is what the Lebanese people need. The Lebanese people need a government which the people feel is with them in good times and in bad. A government which the army feels that is with them, not is going away outside the country. What the Lebanese army wants is a government which supports this army when this army confronts Israel or has a confrontation with Israel in South Lebanon. The people want a government which takes as its responsibility these duties. We need a government which listens to the people, not a government which listens to foreign ambassadors. A government which listens to the people of Akkad and Tripoli and the north and the mountainous areas and Bekaa and southern Beirut. Not a government which is to Bolton and Feltman and Connolly, foreign ambassadors, the names of foreign ambassadors. This is what we look forward to. Will we be able, in the new majority, in the new parliamentary majority, will we be able to achieve this? Now, some of the colleagues sitting amongst us know that I didn't want to go into details, but a word drags a word, and so I made these statements. They will say this is a fake majority, and we said this at the same time for 4 years. We told you, we accused you of being a fake majority before, and you were a fake majority and we weren't able to do anything. Today you all accuse us of being a fake majority, but we today are a true majority, and the parliamentary majority has been given back to the popular majority which was uncovered in the elections in 2009. So the parliamentary majority is the same as the popular majority today. But this doesn't matter. We have a Prime Minister who has been assigned to form a government. We have a government which will be formed. Can we, in the new majority, can we form a government which achieves all of this? A government which listens to the people and supports the people and the government and addresses people's needs? What was said in the newspapers, is it true regarding the government? Is it true? Of course, the government will be divided according to religious affiliation, according to certain portfolios. This is the nature of the situation in Lebanon. And the delay which occurred until now, I think that the other side must take its decision, because the Prime Minister designate still was thinking of the March 14 Alliance participating. So the March 14 Alliance must make up its mind whether it wants to participate in the government or not. We were always keen on a national unity government where all sides participate. We are ready for this. But if there are some sides who are intent on a confrontation and who want America to come back and want America's assistance and want to bring back American navies, they are free. They have their own choice if they insist on taking this direction. So, as I said, we want a national unity government, but if this is impossible, then, of course, the parliamentary factions and the government factions or the political factions in general must hurry up and address this matter, and the government must be formed if the other side, as I said, is intent on not participating. We look forward to the formation of a government, a national unity, but if not, the parliamentary factions which elected Najib Mikati must hold consultations to form a government without the participation of the other side. Now, today, on the 16th of February, just like every year, we remember these leaders, these martyrs, whom we learnt from. We learnt from them patience, perseverance, from the other hand, determination, solidarity, a will, also sacrifice, a readiness to give limitlessly, without any limits. On this day, we are in a stage where we tell our martyrs and to our leaders, your cleansed blood, your jihad, your long jihad, thank God, has enabled us to enter the era of victories. And whenever we hear you, from the time we heard you and listened to you and saw you and smelt your blood, smelt the scent of your blood, the blood you sacrificed for the most sacred cause, we close the door to the losses and we open the door to the victories. May God bless the martyrs and the leaders of the martyrs. And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Well, that's Syed Hassan Nasrallah, as well as Secretary General, delivering a speech of over 80 minutes. I'll give you a brief gist of what he said in that speech. He started by commemorating Hezbollah martyrs, then shifting to regional issues. He said resistance movements seek justice and stability in the region. That is a prelude to peace. Looking at history, he said Jews lived in Islamic countries alongside Muslims for years peacefully. Still, it was the Zionists who were the ones who occupied Palestine. They waged wars and they looted the riches. Confrontation by the resistance movement came naturally afterward. Addressing President Obama, he said justice has two aspects. First, the rights must be returned to their true, truthful owners, referring to occupied land and possessions of Palestinians. The other aspect is that criminals must be held accountable for the crimes they have committed. And instead, America, he said, is backing and protecting Israel. Another regional problem, he said, is the U.S.-backed dictatorial regime in the Middle East region who are responsible to protect the interests of America in this region. Regimes that support Israel are supported by America, and those that don't, they face sanctions and restrictions instead. He said the U.S. domination in the region is on the decline now. An example is the overthrow of the Mubarak regime in Egypt, about which Israel is very anxious. It told the Lebanese to be ready for countering any possible Israeli assault. As for the internal situation in Lebanon, Tosh found the issue of weapons possessed by Hezbollah resistance movement, and he criticized the March 14th Alliance for actually criticizing Hezbollah and fanning up the issue of Hezbollah possessing arms. He said because of this, that is Hezbollah actually having possession of weapons, the Lebanese government is able to send thousands of troops to any part of Lebanon for the sake of defense. As for the UN Special Tribunal and the assassination of former Premier Hariri, he said truth must be uncovered for justice to prevail, while the tribunal proceedings were all politicized and not moving in that direction. He also said that March 14th Alliance has had ties with the U.S. and that their defeat means the U.S. defeat in the region, because the alliance is part of the U.S. project in this region. Criticizing the alliance, is that Prime Minister Designate Mikati is consulting all political groups within Lebanon, not just Hezbollah, to decide on forming the new unity government. unlike the previous premier that belonged to the March for Change Alliance, who consulted with other countries how to run the country, Mugatti is consulting all political groups in Lebanon to decide on the new government. Well, now let's go live to our Beirut bureau. Our correspondent Ali Resk is there to tell us more about this speech just made by Secretary General of Hezbollah Resistance Movement, Seyed Hassan Nasrallah.
Yes,
Ali, let me just tell you about this. Tell us about the timing. You know, the timing. This comes as Israel has just recently threatened to wage another war. How significant do you see the timing of this speech just made by Seyed Hassan Nasrallah?
Well, actually, when it comes to the timing of Seyed Hassan Nasrallah's speech or the timing of Barak's statements, where Ehud Barak, the Israeli Minister of Defense, said that there might be another war, or that Israeli soldiers might be obliged to enter Lebanon once again, this is a yearly speech which is done on this occasion, the commemoration of the memory of Imad Mughniyye, Seyed Abbas Musawi, and Sheikh Raghib Harb, two very important, prominent Hezbollah figures. So the timing is something, it is a yearly speech, as I said. However, it just so happened as well, as you heard in that speech, that we have a new Israeli Joint Chief of Staff, new head of Israeli military, who has been appointed. And just yesterday, this new Joint Chief of Staff, who replaces General Gabi Ashkenazi, went with Ehud Barak to his first visit was to Lebanon's southern border. And so from there, Ehud Barak made these statements regarding the possibility of Israel entering Lebanon once again. And for this reason, we saw the response of Seyed Hassan Nasrallah. So it just so happened that the anniversary of Imad Mughniyye's assassination, or the anniversary of the Hezbollah martyrs, comes at the same time as a new Israeli Joint Chief of Staff has been appointed. But if you allow me, actually, Behrouz, to point to some important issues. The most important point, undoubtedly, which was said by Seyed Hassan Nasrallah, was when he actually hinted that Hezbollah now has the power to occupy parts of Israel. He referred to it, of course, as occupied Palestine, the Galilee, for example. He said that we have the power now to occupy these areas. This is something unprecedented, actually, and this was in response to what Barak said. If you heard, of course, what Seyed Hassan Nasrallah was saying, he said, okay, Barak, you tell the Lebanese, get ready, you might be forced to enter and you enter Lebanon if a new war occurs. He's saying, okay, we'll be forced to enter Israel if a new war occurs. This is actually the equation which he said to say. So this is a new equation, I think, a new stage for the resistance. And very interesting as well, this is something which we've gotten used to from Seyed Hassan, was the way he resorted to Israeli quotes themselves. He, for example, he spoke about an Israeli expert on military or rocket technology, and he spoke about Gabi Ashkenazi. In both cases, what he said, or what he was trying to show, is that the Israelis themselves are confessing to Hezbollah's strength and Israel's vulnerability. When it comes to Ashkenazi, he said, he quoted Ashkenazi as saying, I reassure you, Hezbollah cannot occupy parts of Israel. When Ashkenazi says this, it does mean that there is a debate in Israel whether or not Hezbollah can occupy or cannot. Now, when the debate reaches this level, you can see how Israel, how it views Hezbollah as such a formidable foe. Now, when he spoke about the technical or rocket expert, he also said that Hezbollah can, he quoted this person as saying Hezbollah can close down these airports, he can close down bridge harbors or electric power stations. So he used Israeli rhetoric. And by the way, he did say something as well. He said there are some Israeli logical people who recognize the truth, and he went on to refer to this to these quotes by certain Israeli officials. So he was trying to actually that Hezbollah, even from Israel's perspective, has reached an extremely high level, a level whereby it really is a deterrent for Israel. It prevents Israel from waging war for several reasons. And now, as I said, a new equation: if you invade Lebanon, we invade Israel. This is what he tried to hint to when he said we will enter the Jalili. Of course, other important points regarding the internal situation in Lebanon: the UN-backed tribunal, Mikati, very harsh remarks for Saad Hariri. Saad Hariri, in a speech on the anniversary of his father's assassination, did actually accuse Hezbollah a lot, without naming Hezbollah. He criticized the weapons of Hezbollah. He addressed the issue of arms time and again, Saad Hariri, in that speech 2 days ago. For this reason, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah responded to Saad Hariri by speaking about this issue of arms. And he did say, if you're insisting on getting America's help to address our issue or to tackle or harm us or to bring up our arms once again, this will be aimless, because look at what happened even when America was in its strongest position in July 2006 when it supported Israel's war. Our arms remained intact. And one thing also, actually, by the way, in that perspective, which got my attention, was the way he referred more than once to the American project or American order, how it was collapsing. In that perspective, mentioning Egypt and also mentioning Tunisia. One more thing, if I do have time to mention, is regarding Hezbollah defending, he said never did the people of the region actually practice aggression. The resistance movements are a reaction to Israel's aggression. So he showed that their side was the legitimate side, and that Israel was the aggressor, the side which was practicing these aggressions, the side which was behind injustice, which is very important, I think, for outside observers, especially in the West, to hear when Israel tries to show itself or portray itself as a victim, which is on the border with Lebanon, which is and a Hezbollah-controlled country, which is always out there to gobble up Israel. So that talk about our reaction, and that Israel being the aggressor, and the movements or the resistance movements practicing legitimate self-defense, I think, was very important when it comes to outside observers and actually countering the Israeli argument that Israel is a victim of Hezbollah, which is always intent to attack it. And of course, he did leave open the issue of avenging Ahmad Mughniyeh's death when he said that any Israeli general should always look behind him, because there will be a response to Ahmad Mughniyeh's assassination.
Right. Thank you so much for that, Ali Resk, our correspondent, joining us live from Beirut. Now, to bring you some latest news from around the world, Kaveh joins me now to help me with that to start.
That's right. Yeah. We're going to continue here with the news half hour, whatever's left of it at this point. First, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says the Islamic awakening in the region is rooted in the Iranian nation's determination. Ayatollah Khamenei described pressures imposed on the Islamic Revolution over the past three decades as part of efforts to prevent its spread in the region. He also referred to the revolution in Egypt and said the humiliation caused by Egyptian government's servitude to Israel and the U.S. had been the driving force behind the popular movement. He also said the U.S. is attempting to derail the Egyptian popular movement by convincing Egyptians that some minor accomplishments have been enough. He said such ploys to deceive an awakened nation are unlikely to yield any results.
Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad says the era for deceit and glove puppet regimes is over.
با سوار شدن بر موج حرکت‌های مردمی اینها را جابجا کنید و سیستم را و اساس را و وابستگی به خودتون را حفظ کنید. اون دوره گذشته است.
Addressing a crowd of people in Iran's southwestern city of Bushehr, Ahmadinejad said there is massive pent-up energy against satanic forces in the region. He said the recent revolutions in the Middle East have all been against dictators who had abandoned their nations. Ahmadinejad said the more cruel such dictators, the more U.S. support they have received. He said the people have awakened and this cannot go on. Ahmadinejad also referred to Iran's peaceful nuclear energy program and warned the West against dragging out the P5+1 talks. He said these countries should know that they cannot stop Iran's progress. Ahmadinejad also said Tehran supports justice and law, but will not back down from its rights.
Moving on to developments in Bahrain, one more protester has been killed as the Persian Gulf island nation continues to be rocked by anti-monarchy protests. The demonstrators are calling for the downfall of the decades-old regime of Al-Khalifa family.